Okay, welcome everybody to Parashat Korach. Let us dedicate our learning today, Leilui Nishmat the Rebbe. It is his Yahrzeit, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, Alav HaShalom. And our class today is sponsored and dedicated in memory of Avraham Ben Salah, Alav HaShalom, by his daughter Seely Sit Braha. Thank you so much, Seely. We appreciate all dedications. Also, let's learn for the refuah shelema of my mom, Yafa Esther Bat Rachel, and Avraham Ben Sarah, Tamar Bat Chuta. Anybody else that you want to add to the list, be free to just have them in mind that as we're learning. Today is a very special day in the calendar. I didn't know this. According to a Masoret, it was today, the third day of Tammuz, that the famous story with Yehoshua, where he asked the sun to stand still, the Masoret holds today as that day that the sun stood still. So I want to talk about that a little bit in light of the Korach story, and hopefully in light of the entire Perashah, which ends with the gifts that we give to the Kohanim and the Leviim. So I first want to revisit the story of Yehoshua. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, I'll just give you the brief cliff notes. When we come into the land, the first nation that we encounter is the city of Yericho. That city was defeated very easily. We ended up blowing the shofarot, the seven Kohanim blowing seven shofarot caused that wall to come crumbling down, and the rest was a very easy victory. The next place that we came to and conquered was the Ai, and we were able to conquer them using very clever intelligence. And the third place, which is the one we're going to be discussing today, is the nations. There were many small kingdoms in Eretz Yisrael that after they saw what we did in Yericho, and they saw how we were able to conquer the Ai, and not only that, they knew the history of the Jews and how God did all these miracles for us in our exodus from Egypt. They decided that they were going to band together and they were going to form a coalition, an allegiance, and maybe together with all of their forces united, they would be able to defeat us. And they approached the Giv'onim and they invited the Giv'onim into their coalition. But the Giv'onim knew that it wasn't about numbers. They knew that God was on the side of the Jewish people. And they decided to do their own clever act, which was they decided that they were going to go to the Jewish elders and present themselves as if they came from a faraway land. You remember the story? They put dust on their clothing, their feet were dry, their canteens were empty, and they made the appearance as if they were foreigners. And the Jewish people made peace with them, not knowing that they were the very nation that was supposed to be conquered. Fast forward to the story. Now, what are we going to do with these people? Our word is our bond. We can't destroy them, so we turn them into Chotve Etzim and Shoave Mayim. They're going to be the laborers for the camp. They're going to draw water. They're going to chop the wood. And that was an elegant compromise so that we could keep our word, not destroy them. And yet now we have to go into this next. The next frontier that we're going to fight is with these kingdoms that are still in the land. Fast forward. We start the battle and we are very successful. The only problem is that the sun's about to set. And if the sun sets, we're going to give all of these kingdoms a chance to call for backup. And if they call for backup, it's going to be a much tougher military. It's going to give them possibly a military advantage. So Yehoshua comes up with this plan. And this is why I brought you here. He says the famous words, Shemesh beGivon Dom, let the sun in Givon stand still. And I'm interpreting the word Dom as standing still. We're going to redefine it in a minute. And then he says, Veyareach beEmek Ayalon, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon. And we often understood it to mean that if the moon should rise, then the sun would set. And therefore, we needed for not only the sun not to set, but the moon not to rise, because there is a movement, a celestial movement, that all is part of a dance. And we needed for those two bodies to play their role. But really, what they were doing is they were answering, or they were responding. I'm going to use a stronger word. They were obeying the word of man. So we had learned that the stars and the moon and all of, we had seen that like in Joseph's dream, they were all bowing down to Yosef. The idea or the concept that the sun and the moon would answer or respond to or obey a human being, that is very exciting in and of itself. But I brought you the story today, not just because it's the third of Tammuz, but because I think the story relates beautifully to our Korach Perasha today. And I'll start to bring it together for us. When we say Shemesh beGivon Dom, not only should it stop, should it freeze in its place, we know the word dom, vayidom aharon, to be silent. We also know like the kol demama, something very, very like a faint voice. So within this shemesh begivon dom, we also know that a demama is darkness. So we may have understood this just, it's so fantastical to begin with, that we may have just understood this as a great miracle that God did for humanity and telling generations to come that yes, all of nature is at our beck and call and will respond to us. That's all very exciting. I'm going to see a lot of that in our Perashah today as well. But one exciting way to interpret this story is that it wasn't just that the sun stood still and the moon stood still, but rather the moon went in front of the sun, causing an eclipse.
Kind of like trying to play out what Yehoshua is,
because
he's compared to the moon.
Yes, who is speaking? Because I'm loving what you're saying.
Hannah Herman,
I have to say, I love, love, love what you're saying. If Moshe is the sun, is that what you're saying? And then Yehoshua, who's reflecting his light from Moshe, is the moon. Hannah, I'm in awe from what you're saying because it's so perfect. It ties even better to Korach than you're even going to realize. Well, you probably did realize it already. It's fantastic.
Yehoshua was quiet the whole time. Moshe was the leader.
Beautiful. Class dismissed. If you only learned what Hannah told you today, then you got your money's worth for today. Hannah, I thank you. It's beautiful. I'm gonna.
I'm so happy I had off and I could come this morning. I just got back from JFK and I was like, I can learn a little Torah before I go to work.
What? Learn a little Torah. You're teaching us Torah. So thank you. I'm gonna repeat what you're saying. I want to make sure that everybody heard. This is Hannah Herman. I want it for the recording so I'll remember whose name to be able to say it in. She's totally filling in a lot of blanks, and she's saying at the time that Yehoshua is coming into the land and Moshe, who had been the sun, and Yehoshua, who had been the moon, now Yehoshua is saying Shemesh beGivon Dom. It's sort of a little bit of a I wish I had a better word for it. It's sort of telling a story. Right now, the sun is being covered, and I want to add to this because it's being covered by the moon. And you might think, if you read the story of Yehoshua, you might say that Yehoshua covered Moshe, the moon's covering the sun. But the purpose of this whole analogy for Hannah and for the rest of us is the sun is still there. And the sun never loses its light. And although we are currently in an eclipse, where right now it looks like the moon is the only thing that we could see, what we need to recognize is that the sun and its light, as faint as demama, or as silent as it may be, still exists. And why is this such an important visual for coming into Korach, or the parasha of Korach? Korach's entire debate, or his entire platform, is going to be that everybody's shining except for him. When we read, now we could open our parasha. I want you to have this idea today. I think the 21st of June is the summer solstice. So it really plays beautifully into our story if we want to, you know, use the current events. But what Korach is going to see, or the way Korach is going to see himself, or maybe I'll just give you the punchline before we even start. Korach is going to see himself as small and everybody else around him as huge. And what do I mean by that? He's comparing himself to everybody else around him. And in that equation, when he does that math, he finds himself in a place that is minimizing. Let's read it together so we could understand what's happening with Korach. We'll bring in Yehoshua. We'll bring in the whole thing together. Vayikach Korach. So the question everybody asks is, first of all, Korach starts out as a singular. Let's read the whole pasuk. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehat ben Levi. So Korach, the son of Yitzhar, who's the son of Kehat, who's the son of Levi, what does he take? We're not sure. But also, Vedatan ve'Aviram b'nei Oliav, and Datan and Aviram, the sons of Oliav, and On ben Pelet b'nei Reuven. If I had a red marker, I would be circling every single thing here. There's nothing grammatically correct about the way that this is structured, because it has Korach taking in the singular. But at the same time, together with his taking, we have these Datan and Aviram, and we also have On ben Pelet. There seem to be four major players in our pasuk. Whether Korach took the other three players, or what it is exactly that he took, we're not sure of. But one thing that we know is that maybe he took the fact that he is the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kehat, the son of Levi. He took that with him, and rather than taking those accolades, whenever we have the name of a character or a personality with so much lineage being ascribed to him, he takes that, who he is. He has, we'll use our terms that we started out with, he has his own brightness, he has his own light, he has his yichus. He has his connections. Who were B'nai Levi? Let's talk about that for a minute. You have Moshe and Aharon, the two leaders, both come from Levi. He's coming from the premier family of the day. And of course, Moshe is going to hold that against him. He's going to say, Hame'at, is that not enough for you that you're already so great? And we know and we learn, and it's human nature, that the closer you are to greatness, the more you want that spotlight for yourself. It's the brother of the king who wants to be king. The rest of us don't dream about that. We don't say, oh, I want to be the king. It's so far from our reach that it's not something that we even are striving towards. And so the people who strive, you know, the closest ones to the throne, the second, the third, the fourth to the throne, those are the ones that have their eye on that position. So Korach He's the son of Yitzhar, he's the son of Kehat, and we know that Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kehat, and Merari. Gershon, that is the grandfather of Moshe. And Kehat is the grandfather of Korach. And there is a story that goes on that one that Elitzaphan ends up getting the son or the grandson of the younger brother ends up getting promoted to the position of a Nasi. And so it's possible, based on the background, that Korach felt slighted. He's Ben Yitzhar, he's Ben Kehat, he's Ben Levi, he should come first. And maybe that's what he took with him. Either he took his titles with him and said, hey, I deserve, or he took his titles and didn't appreciate what they represented because he wanted more. He also takes with him, so he's, let's just say, feeling marginalized or feeling like he was passed over. We also have Datan and Aviram, who are, we know already, Asaf Suf, Erev Rav, they're troublemakers to begin with. But he also takes with him On Ben Pelet from the family of Reuven. Now we know Reuven has a gripe as well, because Reuven should be the firstborns, Bechori Ata. Except that Reuven, at here in chapter 16 in the book of Bemidbar, we find Korach feels marginalized, and On Ben Pelet feels marginalized, and Datan v'Amiram are never happy with anything. So if there's any type of dissension, they're the first to jump on board. And the next verse tells us, Vayakumu lifne Moshe. The idea of the panim, you're going to see this a lot, they literally get in his face. Hannah, I see a hand up. Are you raising your hand? Because I'm not so good with Zoom. If you are, feel free to unmute yourself and chime in. I'm not sure if that's what that means. I'll continue. So, Vayakumu lifne Moshe, they stand up literally in his face. And now, in 1 minute, they went from 4 men to 250 men. And who are these 250 men? Nesi'e Eda. We're not just talking about nobodies. We're talking about highly regarded men of renown. Keri'e Mo'ed, Anshe Shem. These are important people. And again, we have these words, Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aharon. Why the word al? They are literally, maybe an English word would be ganging up, al, up, on. They were superseding Moshe and Aharon. And what were they telling Moshe and Aharon? Rav lachem. You don't think it's a bit much? You don't think you overdid it? Rav lachem, it's too much for you? Ki kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. Guess what, Moshe? Guess what, Aharon? Did you forget what God said at Sinai? Where everybody, it's a mamlechet kohanim, everybody's a kohanim, everybody's a mamlechet, everybody's a king. Why, if everybody in the nation is supposed to be sanctified and holy, kulam kedoshim, ubetocham Hashem, isn't God inside of every person? If God's inside of every person, then every person is a king and every person is a priest. Umadua titnasu al kehal Hashem. So why would you want to be nesi'im? Why would you think it's okay for you to lord over the congregation of God, of Hashem? Hashem says we're all equal. But with you being the king and Aharon being the Kohen, we lost our equilibrium. You two are now at an elevated state, which means by definition that the rest of us are rungs lower. In other words, if you guys are going to be the sun, you're forcing us to be the moon. You're taking away from our light. Moshe hears this, Vayipol al panav. Even the imagery of somebody who might be standing, when you're standing, what do? You can cast the shadow. When you fall on your face, you can't cast the shadow anymore. So maybe Moshe is saying, if I'm casting a shadow with my stature, let me bring myself down. Vayidaber el Korach, he speaks to Korach and to his people, and he says, Bokir veyoda. So what is really Korach saying? He's challenging or insinuating that Moshe and Aharon usurped their role, because God himself said that everybody's a king. Why would we need a king over all the other kings? So now he puts Moshe on the defensive, having to prove that God asked him to be in this position. And if we've read anything in Torah up until now, it's been Moshe's hesitance to have this role. The last thing he needs, like a hole in the head, is to be babysitting these people that he didn't even give birth to. It's not a role that he asked to be in. He tried to decline back on the mountain with the burning bush. It's not something he asked for. It's something that was asked of him. And now he has to prove that. So he tells Korach and all the people with him, Boker ve'yoda Hashem et asher lo. In the morning, God is going to show who belongs to him. Ve'et hakadosh, and the Holy One. Ve'hekriv elav, and he will bring him close to them. Ve'et asher yivchar bo yakriv elav. We have these words twice. He's going to bring them close to him. What do these words remind us of? If we recognize where we've seen this terminology, Bikrovai Akadesh. Do you remember what happened with Nadab and Avihu, where the language that was used was Bikrovai Akadesh, after Nadab and Avihu brought the Esh Zara, and they ended up being consumed like human sacrifices, possibly? When God tells Moshe, he says, go tell Aharon, Bikrovai Akadesh. And we didn't know exactly what that meant. We had said that maybe it was Moshe's way of telling, Hashem's way of telling Aharon that by putting up a smoke screen, the sons of Aharon actually ended up putting a barrier between God and the people. One of the explanations of why Hashem took them out is because he says these words. If you're looking for it, it's in chapter 10 of Sefer Vayikra, Vayomer, chapter 10, verse 3. Vayomer Moshe l'Aharon, hu asher diber Hashem lemor, bikrovai akadesh, I need to interface with all of my people, by being close to the people, by manifesting, by interacting and allowing the people to have a unfiltered experience of God, because the inauguration of the Mishkan was intended to be a take-two of Har Sinai. So if God was coming down, the people should have experienced him in Har Sinai, and they didn't. They recoiled, they were fearful, for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. Now, on their turf, God's presence is going to come into the Mishkan so that all the people could experience him. And when Nadav and Avihu put up a smoke screen, God says, Bikrovai Akadesh, this was not the time. All the other days of the year, yes, there needs to be a barrier. Lo yid eni ha'adam v'chai. Man can't see God and still be living. But once, this time, on the dedication day of the Mishkan, that was the day that I was going to reveal myself to them. Ve'al penei kol ha'am ekabed. And in front of all these people, my kavod is going to be seen. And then we see these words, Vayidom Aharon. the same words as the Shemesh beGivon Dom. Aharon takes a silence. He takes a back seat. He allows for something, for another, for something else to take the spotlight. And the reason that I'm saying this is because back in our Perasha, when Moshe is saying, Hikriv Elav, Yakriv Elav, he's using the Krovai Akadesh terminology, saying one thing: be very careful. Because Bikrovai Akadesh last time ended up with Nadav and Avihu being burnt with their frying pans. And I'm sorry if I'm being a spoiler, I'm going guessing that you know what actually happens. And so I'll tell it to you as the text unfolds. But for those of you who already know, you couldn't start to put the pieces together. What does Moshe say? Why does he tell them to take a frying pan? Because he's saying, you think you want to be a Kohen? It's not enough that you're a Levi. You want to also be a Kohen? So why don't you try it out and see how it works out for you? Zot asu. Take machtot, take frying pans. Korach, every one of you. Utnu bahen esh, and put fire in it. And put the ketoret. Lifnei Hashem, this idea of the Pnei Hashem, of the face of God, keeps repeating itself over and over, because that's where the original Nadav and Avihu story took place. So do that in front of God. And Vehaya Ha'ish, and God's going to choose who is the Kadosh. And if you think you're telling me and Aharon Rav Lachem, I am telling you, Rav Lachem ben Levi, you are overstepping your boundaries. Vayomer Moshe el Korach, Moshe tells Korach, Shimuna ben Levi, Hame'at mikem, this is what we had discussed earlier, why it's not enough for you, Ki yivdil Elohei Yisrael, that the God of Yisrael separated you from the whole nation, and he brought you lehakriv etchem elav, he brought you close to you, bikrovaya kadesh, he already made you holy. La'avodet avodat ha-mishkan, your job is to do the job of the mishkan. Ve'la'amod lifnei ha'eda le'shartam, you are the representatives of the people. And he brought you, all your brothers, and all your brothers, the children of Levi. But that's not enough for you. You also want the kehuna. I want you to remember this because it's going to propel us into another story as well. So before we go there, I'm just going to take a few more pesukim. Lachen ata, therefore you and your entire congregation who are here. And by the way, Moshe says, Aharon mahu, why are you starting up with Aharon? Kitalinu alav, that you're complaining about him. Moshe sends, he calls for Datan and Aviram, Bnei Oliav. And you know what happens? And this is the third leg to the story. When Moshe calls the Datan and Aviram, they answer him. We would say the chutzpah, the nerve that they have, that Moshe, the head of the entire congregation, is calling you, and you have the nerve to say what? Lo na'ale. We're not coming. So we have a lot of things going on here. The first thing I'd like to say before we address the Datan and Aviram lo na'ale is we have a scenario where we have people who are already illustrious, who are already promoted and elevated, but yet they feel like their position isn't enough. And so because they are technically brothers, the fathers or the grandfathers are brothers, it starts to sound a little bit as if Korach is seeing himself as inutil, he's not useful, as a person who is, I'll use the word, a spare. What do we need Korach for? He doesn't really serve a purpose. Now, wait a minute. The minute Korach thinks of himself as a person who doesn't serve a purpose, which Moshe just responded and said, what are you talking about? You serve the biggest purpose. You're serving your brethren. God chose you from among all the people. But the minute he sees himself, maybe we'll use last week's analogy, the minute he sees himself as a grasshopper, that's what he's seeing himself as, or maybe he's seeing Moshe as the giant, Moshe as the sun, and in relation to Moshe, he's really, we're lucky if he's the moon. He doesn't even see himself as that. He sees himself as somebody, and we see this very often, the people who most, what's a good word for it? They most feel themselves, they undervalue themselves, maybe that's a better word. The people who most undervalue themselves, they feel that it's the fault of everybody else. I'll give you make it simpler. I'm going to use two terms. I'm going to say if Korach sees himself as Hevel. Why do I say Korach is seeing himself as Hevel? Cain is the star, the moon, the sun, and everything in between. Cain is born. He's the first human birth that is made into this world. He is the whole story. He is the whole package. He fills the whole universe, right? Chava gives birth to Cain. He has a name before he enters the scene. He is, there's nothing better ever to come into the world than Cain himself. And so when Cain enters the world, Vatahar Vateled et Cain, she gives birth to him. He's complete. He has a name. She says, Kaniti Ish et Hashem. Even Hashem's name first appears on the scene when he's born. This is the first place that is God's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is noted this way. So Cain pulls with him the entire universe. And then you get Hevel. Vatosef laledet et achiv et Hevel. She gives birth to his brother. He doesn't even have a name. He's just the brother. Oh yeah, by the way, his name is Hevel. And if you want to feel even worse, Hevel Havalim, what does Hevel mean? Vapor, nothing. So if you want to see those two brothers, the Cain and Hevel brothers, repeated in our story, Korach is seeing himself as Hevel, and he's saying to his brother Cain, and maybe he thinks on some crazy level, he thinks that he's gonna be the voice for the underdog, for the underprivileged, for the underappreciated. Because Hevel never got to say anything. We didn't hear his voice. You know when we heard Hevel's voice? Kol deme achicha tzoakim elai min ha'adama. We only got to hear Hevel's blood calling out from the bowels of the earth. And I bring this story not just because it's a story where you have two brothers and one brother is the spare and one is the whole universe encapsulated into him. But they're gonna have the same ending, and maybe the Torah is trying to tell us human nature and human tendency from the very beginning, from the Cain and Hevel story. You want to talk about the spies, you want to talk about Korach, wherever you turn this way or that way, you're going to find somebody who's going to feel small. And that small person, in order to feel great, is going to try and pull down the big guy. The small, underappreciated person is going to try and topple over or undermine or destroy the established people that are ruling I know I'm not saying it and I'm not being very definitive on the way I'm describing it, but I believe what's taking place here is there are so many levels to this. So I want you to have, when we're reading the Korach story, I want you to see him on the one hand as attempting to be the voice of Cain, but the Torah is not gonna want his message to stand. Because what's his message? Cain's, Hevel didn't say anything, the earth swallows him up. We know that whole story. Cain says something, and the earth is gonna end up swallowing him up. What is Cain saying that God is saying, I don't accept that statement from you? The statement or the position that Korach is taking is, it's either me, it's either us, me, Datan, Aviram, On, the 250 people, it's either us or it's you, Moshe and Aharon. We can't coexist. We can't both be here. Either we stay or you stay. I'll say it differently. The world isn't big enough for both of us. And God is going to say, and that's why I brought the Yehoshua story in, if the world is big enough for the sun and the moon, then the world is big enough for Moshe and Korach. And that's why Moshe and Yehoshua, thanks to our friend Hannah, are a beautiful imagery or a beautiful analogy to show how the two coexist, to show how the moon accepts its radiance from the sun and is able to shine brightly. Once the moon is able to take its light from the sun, then it now can take that light and reflect it back to the people. That's the example, and that's why the story of Yehoshua stands, and that's why Yehoshua is one of two men standing at the end of 40 years. Yehoshua masters this concept that there is room for everybody to shine. The other person who goes in, and we had discussed him at length, but maybe it pays to revisit him right now, because I think these stories may have been lost on Korach. The story of Korach is coming on the heels of the story of the spies. And if you just look at the last verse from last week, this is the bridge that's going to bring us. Last week's final verse says, Ani Hashem Elohechem, I am Hashem, your God. I am the one who took you out of Mitzrayim to be your Elohim. And then again, these words, Ani Hashem Elohechem. One verse has this same statement twice. I am Hashem, your God, or better, I am Hashem, your creator. So if Yehoshua is going to come, and he's going to bring with him into the land, we need this to come into the land, he's going to bring what Yehoshua had said when the tourists came back from with their report from the land. Yehoshua was very clear to say, Hashem is with us. Hashem is going to help us. Don't you worry. So if Yehoshua's statement is, Hashem is with us, and Hashem is going to give everybody room to shine, and that's how he designed his world, we need that modality to get into the land. But it needs to be coupled with Yehoshua's statement. And now I'm ready to tell you, needs to be coupled with Caleb's statement. And I'm ready to tell you what Caleb says, not because I just want to rehash what happened last week, but because Datan and Aviram in verse 12 say it themselves. They echo these words, Lo na'ale. They're not just telling Moshe, we're not going to come up to you. They're saying a mouthful. They're saying, Moshe, we're not going to come up to you because Lo na'ale. because we're not going into the land. If you were the tour guide who followed through and were taking us into the land, then maybe you'd be somebody that we'd want to listen to. But since lo na'ale, since we're not going into the land, what are they really saying? Saying, Moshe, what are you good for? You took us out of Egypt. Actually, I'll show you the verse itself. The next verse, what do they say? Hame'at, what, it's not enough for you? Ki he'elitanu, that you took us out of an eretz zavat chalav udvash. You took us out of a land. They're calling now Egypt the place of torture, torment, where they killed babies and they put them as bricks alive in their buildings. This is the place that the Tanna and Abiram are calling Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. And what did you do, Moshe? Lehamitenu Bamidbar. You only brought us here so you could kill us here. Ki tishtarer alanu, gam tishtarer. What do you think? That you're going to dominate us? That you're going to rule over us? Moshe, we're not listening to you. And the reason we're not listening to you, the reason we are lo na'ale, is because lo na'ale. The reason we're not coming up to you is because you're not taking us into the land. So why do we need to listen to you? Who made you the boss? Af lo el eretz zavat chalash udvash hevitanu. You didn't take us to your so-called land that's flowing with milk and honey. Vetiten lanu nachalat, and you promised us, oh yeah, you're going to get a heritage and you're going to get a fields and you're going to get vineyards. What do you think? Ha'eneha anashim ha'hem tenaker. What do you think? The word tenaker is horrible language. It means you're going to gouge out the eyes. In English, it's a much nicer way to say you're going to pull the wool over their eyes. What do you think? You think you're going to be able to keep fooling all of us? You're going to bait and switch? You're going to tell us you're taking us to a land of milk and honey, and meanwhile you're going to keep us dead here? Which the reality was, they are all going to die in the desert. Let's remember one thing. When Korach and his people come to challenge Moshe and Aharon, their timing is impeccable, because Moshe and Aharon's stock has just plummeted, because God said that because of the whole ordeal with the scouts that went to the land and the people crying, because of that, they were going to be in the desert for 40 years. And the sand was going to be their burial ground. So the morale of the people was in the toilet. It was terrible. And so they took the opportunity when the people are down, when you have people who are disgruntled or who are have nothing to live for or nothing to hope for, this is something that they're willing to sign up for. And so what is Datan and Aviram? They say again this term, lo na'ale. They're mirroring or they're responding to Kalev. Because Kalev said, alo na'ale v'yarashnu ota. Kalev had said in Chapter 13, verse 30. Vayahos Kalev et ha'am, he had quieted the people to Moshe, and he said, Alona ale, yes, we can. But you know what the genius was about what he said? And we spent a lot of time last week with these eight words that Kalev says that should live in infamy, not in infamy, they should be celebrated. Alona ale, he says something very important for all of us. He starts in the singular. Alo, you want to go up to the mountain? You want to get to the top? You have to start one person. You, yourself. It's not a group activity. Getting up, rising up, doesn't happen in a group. A rising up that's sustainable, yes, there's what we call an uprising where the groups all get together. That is a big hoopla, and then once the crowds disperse and everybody goes back to their own house, it's a very short-lived scenario. But Allah, we want to take the people up to Eretz Yisrael, and we want it to be something sustainable, then it has to be where every person does their own Allah, their own personal uplifting. And what do I mean by Allah, personal uplifting? Moshe had said it very clearly. He said, when you're going to go to the land, you're going to see that he's using their own words. They had said that the Amaleki is in the Negev. So what is in the Negev? What is the whole idea? Everything that we're talking about in Sefer Bamidbar is we want to go from the south to the north. Whether it's from the Sinai Desert to Eretz Israel, or whether it's from the Negev, the south of Israel, we want to head up north. We start in the Negev. What is the Negev? When the people say that the Amaleki is living in verse 29, Amalek, I'm in chapter 13, Amalek Yoshev Be'eretz HaNegev, what is being said here? This is for us, this is recorded, whether they said these exact words in this exact way, regardless, it's being recorded here for us to know that the south, that the bottom, that the beginning, that the starting point is very often, we're going to refer to it as the Negev, the south. The Negev, or the south, or the Amalek, it's the place where our personal Amaleks are most prominent. What is a personal Amalek? What is the Amalek sound in your ears? What would Amalek say if he was whispering in your ear right now? You know what Amalek would say? You can't do it. You don't have what it takes to climb the mountain. Because what Moshe wanted them to do was to go up from the Negev and to go up to the top of the mountain. And Amalek is sitting in the Negev. And you know what Amalek's mantra is? Amalek is saying, there is no God. Who do you think you are? Why do you think that you're going to be able to climb this mountain? Anything negative, 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 you'll remember, you'll make that association. All negativity is part of the Amalek and is on the bottom. And what is Kalev telling the people? Don't get stuck in the Negev. Alona Aleh. Of course, we see in this week's parashah that Tana and Aviram are saying, Lona Aleh. Now we understand really what they're saying. They're saying, we're not climbing that mountain. And Kalev is saying to us, you better climb that mountain because you need to get out of the Negev. We know that if we're in our own negative personal space, how do we get out of the Negev? How do we get out of that space? The first thing we have to do is Allah. We have to make a personal choice that we want out. I am done with this Negev. I've been here, it's hell, and I no longer want to be in this place or in this space. That's Allah. The next word is Na'aleh, in the plural. If you want to get out of it, after you make a personal decision to move forward and past this place of negativity, Na'aleh. Kalev is saying, you don't have to do it alone. Recruit your loved ones, recruit your family, recruit your community, recruit your nation. How do you climb up a mountain? Allah, you take the first few steps and then Na'aleh, and then your climbing buddy will help you up. You can't get up all the way yourself, you can't get up the mountain, but you do have to start it yourself. And Kalev coming into the land with us, he has to come into the land because we need this voice. His voice, and I'll use different words, his voice is not Yehoshua's voice. They're not one and the same. Yehoshua's voice is Hashem is on our side. Hashem has done miracles for us before. He's a student of Moshe. He's his, excuse me, he's his protege. And so for sure, Yehoshua's going to say, Hashem sent frogs and hail and did all of these things and split seas. And Hashem and Hashem and Hashem is going to carry us through. So that's the voice that we're going to get on one side. But we also need the other voice. And maybe the first voice is the voice of Kalev. Because Kalev's voice is the one that's going to say, nowhere in his 8 words does he even use the name of God. When Caleb speaks and he says, Alona aleve yarashnu ata ki yacholnu chala, those eight words doesn't have God's name in there. It says, don't wait for an external miracle or an external blast to propel you forward. What's going to propel you forward is your own inner strength. Alona ale. We're going to use our own sense of ability, ve'yarashnu ota, because it is part of our Yerusha. It's part of our inheritance as long as we keep Yerusha, Morasha. As long as we keep the heritage, then this is part of our DNA. And the rest of the Pasuk says, ki yachol nuchala. We had said this last week, but maybe it pays to repeat it now because Korach and his cohorts are the anti-entering into the land voice. They're the ones who are saying, we're dying here. You took us out of Egypt. That was a land flowing of milk and honey. There is no land flowing of milk and honey. It's all been a hoax. This is the voice that we see in this week's parasha. And so we need Caleb to bring us into the land because he's telling us not only that we complete the land and the land completes us, because the word yachol from v'yachulu means to complete. It means something else. It means just because you don't have what it takes right now to get to the top of that mountain, if you just start the climb itself will yachol, will complete you. If you want to get from the Negev and you want to go to the top, and when we use this terminology, we want to have an imagery. We hear Amalek is in the Negev. Picture Amalek is pulling you down from your legs. And what's up on the Har? We know always, historically, God's on the Har, divinity's on the Har, greatness is on the top, the pinnacle, the top of the mountain. In any language, in any nationality, the top of the mountain is where you want to aspire, the place that you want to get to. And if you picture Amalek is trying to pull you down by your feet so you don't go climb that mountain, because Amalek is in the Negev, but what's on the mountain? On the mountain, we want to picture, if God is on that mountain, picture Moshe on the mountain. Moshe's hands are stretching up. God's hands are coming down to pull him up. God's pulling us up while Amalek is pulling us down. The tension that exists, whether it's in Parashat Shlach, whether it's in Parashat Korach, this tension of being wanting to either reach, like the sulam, magia hashamayma, we're trying to reach to the heavens, but at the same time we're mutzav arza, we're being pulled down. We have to remind ourselves, if we're trying to climb our personal mountains, who's stronger? Amalek pulling our feet or God pulling us by the hands? If we recognize and we realize that God is 1,000 times infinite stronger than Esa and I, will put our eyes and our hands towards the heavens and we'll head up and we'll go up that way. And so when we come here and we see these words, what Korach and his people are saying is we're giving in to the Amalek. We're giving in to the Lo Na'aleh. We're giving in to staying in the Negev. We're giving in to all of this negativity. And not only that, once you're in this place of negativity, it's a place of darkness. There's an eclipse. There's something blocking our view. We don't see ourselves for the light that we actually possess because we're so busy looking at the others who are supposedly taking our light.
Excuse me, may I say something?
Yes, who is that?
Zella.
Hi, Zella.
Hi, hi. You know, the language, what you're saying is so beautiful. It's also, I think this is teaching us what damage anger can do, because they infuriate Moshe so much that Moshe says, shumuna. time he uses that language,
Shimon HaMorin,
it's the rock, which, for whatever the cause is his kind of death knell in a way. He will not go into the land.
I think that's a beautiful point. I love that you're saying that. I'm going to add to that also. The commentaries say, why of all things did the earth end up swallowing Korach and his cohorts? Vatiftach ha'aretz et piha. Why does the land open its mouth? And it ties into what you're saying. When you open your mouth and you say things that are inappropriate, or you sin with your mouth, then your punishment, you've heard the term midah keneged midah, measure for measure, then the punishment is going to come exactly with the way, and here it says, Moshe says, Yivra Hashem upatzta ha'adama et piha. The earth is going to open up her mouth and swallow. And sure enough, vatiftach ha'aretz et piha. The earth opens its mouth and swallows them. Just to bring in, add to what you're saying, how does the story of Cain and Hevel, what happens over there? The aretz patzta et piha. The land also opened its mouth. So not only is this a story about anger, not only is this a story about when we blame other people, we're not able to see our own greatness, we also have a story here that is gonna sort of continue and say, you had it right, Korach. You said, Kulanu Kedoshim. You didn't hear or you didn't believe what you yourself said. Because if you recognize that we're all Kedoshim, then all you had to say is, we're not all equal, we're not all identical, but we're all Kedoshim in our own way. Once you think that we all have to be Kadosh in the same exact way, then you think that there should be equality and you don't need a Moshe and you don't need an Aharon. And of course, the irony of it is, they didn't want Moshe or Aharon, but they themselves wanted to take that seat for themselves, which sort of a little bit ironic in the saying. But what's so beautiful about the way the parasha ends? So we start this parasha with trying to get a grasp on what it means to be holy, or what it means to be special, or where do we fit in? Can we make space? You know, the sin of Adam, we all talk about that and how future generations need to rectify that sin. But the truth of the matter is, the Cain and Hevel story is the one we're still struggling with today. Because if Cain is filling up the whole world, is there room for Hevel? Can Cain make room for Hevel? When Cain feels that Hevel's stealing some of his space, what does he feel he needs to do? He doesn't know how to move over and make room, because Hevel also can be holy in his own way and it doesn't take away anything from Cain. Cain ends up feeling he needs to literally obliterate and kill and bury and hide his brother because the whole world is his. And so the parasha comes and tells us it now it has to play mediator. And it has to say, yes, everybody is holy and there is space for everybody. And I believe it does it beautifully by ending the parasha with the gifts that we give to the Leviim and the gifts that we give to the Kohanim. And when we give them these gifts, what happens to us? In gifting, in taking the tithes, the 10%, and then the 10% of the 10% for the Leviim, for the Kohanim and for the Leviim. When we give these gifts, what happens? וידבר השם אל אהרון, ואני הנה נתתי לך, I am giving you משמרת תרומתי, לכל קודשי בני ישראל. I am giving you this, and I'd like to read these words, לכל קודשי בני ישראל, saying that although you're the one who receive, who you are the ones who are doing the service, and therefore you are the ones who are doing the receiving, what's happening to the people? They are Kodshe B'nai Yisrael. They are being sanctified by the act of giving. And so, like I said, we are each holy in our own way. We have different roles to play. We are all sons. We all shine. And if there is at any point in our life darkness, or if at any point we feel that we are being eclipsed, guess what? All we have to do I need to move the moon, or do I just need to do what? Just move myself. Just move a couple of degrees. Move away from the darkness. Move away from the things that are blocking my greatness. And what happens? Right there and right then, my own greatness comes into focus. And I think it's beautiful that they end with the Teruma, with the giving, because the whole story of Kayin and Hevel started with Kayin wanting to bring a mincha. And now God is saying, let me show you. The way to give a gift is in a way that's not going to minimize you. It's in a way that's going to make you realize your holiness, but realizing your holiness within a system that allows for other people's holiness as well. Kayin wanted to give a gift, and he wanted to be the only holy one in the whole world. Now Moshe is telling the people, and God is telling Aharon, the way that the people will become holy is by seeing your greatness and not feeling that it diminishes their greatness. And I had entitled this earlier, The Blame Game. Once we blame other people for our darkness, then we're not taking the words of Kalev and saying we have what it takes. Our godliness is internal. It comes from within us, and nobody could take that from us. Get away from the negative, go towards the mountain, recognize that Hashem's hands pulling us up. He can only pull up our hands when we raise them. When we do this, this is calling to God, this is praying to God, this is realizing that God's outstretched hands, his yad chazakah, he has his zeroa netuya, he has his hand outstretched, and all he's asking is that we pull ourselves in that direction, and not allow ourselves to be pulled down in the opposite direction. With that, the gift itself is being able to give and being able to feel great and kadosh from the giving that we do. And so with that, I wish everybody a beautiful week. I thank you for joining. I thank you for your beautiful input. Thank you so much for sharing. Hannah, Zella, if anybody else has anything they want to share, please feel free to unmute yourself and share with us.